Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Talked about this to start the show, but to me, first sporting event I have been to that has felt 100 billion % normal on Sunday afternoon. I went to go see the local Nashville Sounds AAA baseball stadium. Christian Yelich was playing, doing his rehab in the Sounds are the AAA affiliate of the Milwaukee Brewers. And so Christian Yelich was there. My 10-year-old wanted to go watch Christian Yelich. So we went and got tickets, took the whole family, and no masks required. And anyway, 100% normal stadium environment. I've been to the NFL. I've been to college basketball. I've been to major college football. But all of those sports required masks, social distancing. It was not the case anymore in Nashville. 100% normal minor league baseball game. It felt amazing to be sitting there, perfect weather in Nashville, zero restrictions. If you had never known COVID existed, you would have never known that there had ever been any difference at all. It felt 100% normal, awesome experience to be able to go to a sporting event, pro sports event. I've been to some high school events. I've been to some little league games, certainly, where everything feels normal there. But I'm talking about a full stadium, thousands of people, everything the exact same as it would have been back in 2019, which was the last time that they were playing AAA baseball in this stadium. They never played all of last year. So I think whatever you're into, basketball, baseball, hockey, football, it's going to be back, soccer, to nearly 100% normal really, really fast now that the CDC has lifted its mask and social distancing requirements for vaccinated people. But there's no way to know who's vaccinated and who is not, which means effectively everything is back to normal in many different communities. That certainly was the feeling in the Sound Stadium on Sunday afternoon. Now, also told you, teased it as we went to break, that I was going to talk a bit about during the course of this show, the fact that the NBA has now set their sort of experimental, I think it's fair to say that it's a very experimental process of the 7-8 game and the 9-10 game. And let me just go ahead and let you know where we are headed. But by far, the game that is going to get the vast majority of attention is on Wednesday night. The Warriors are playing the Lakers. The winner of that game will be the 7 seed. The loser of that game will play the winner of Spurs Grizzlies, and whoever wins that game will be the 8 seed. So that is the scenario that is in play here. There's been all sorts of tanking and obfuscation and crazy decision-making that has gone on in the NBA. The Clippers seem to basically just decide, hey, we don't want to be the 3 seed. And so they end up being the 4 seed when all is said and done. And we'll see whether that ends up being smart or not, because it seemed like they didn't want to potentially have to play the Lakers too early. And who knows exactly how all of this is going to shake out. But the Lakers could have theoretically ended up outside of the play-in. But instead, the Portland Trailblazers got a tiebreak on them and managed to hold on throughout the course of that process. And the Trailblazers will be your 6 seed. The Lakers are your 7 seed. And again, they will play the Warriors on Wednesday night in a game that will get almost all of the attention. But if you're out there listening to us right now, you may be curious what this scenario will look like. And so tomorrow night, we will have the Wizards Celtics playing for the 7 seed. And then we will have the Hornets and the Pacers playing to advance and try to win the 8 seed. So the easy way to explain this is if you win 1 game in the 7-8 matchup, you are the 7 seed. The loser of the 7-8 seed goes to play the winner of the 9-10 matchup. And whoever wins that game will be the 8 seed. So I think I explained that. I've tried to explain it several different times throughout the course of today's show, but there's a lot of people out there who are not familiar with this, and I'll be honest with you, I was one of them. So let me explain again using the Lakers and the Warriors as the easiest example, because that's the game that most people are going to be focused on. Whoever wins on Wednesday night between the Lakers, who are the 7 seed, and the Warriors, who are the 8 seed, will be the 7 seed in the NBA playoffs. So they will play against the 2. Whoever loses that game, their season is not over. They will play the winner of the 9-10 matchup, which is the Memphis Grizzlies against the San Antonio Spurs. And whoever wins that 9-10 matchup would then have to beat the loser of the 7-8 matchup. So this is a storyline that is going to be interesting to follow in general. And of course, there remains uncertainty about how healthy LeBron James really is, because LeBron continues to have issues with his ankle a little bit. But again, you're going to get the Western Conference play-in. All of the attention on Wednesday night, 10 o'clock Eastern, is going to be on the Warriors going up against the Lakers. It's going to get 90% of the attention. So the easy way to think about it, if I have made it understandable enough, is if you're in that 9-10 game, in order to make the playoffs, you have to win 2 games in a row. If you're in that 7-8 game, in order to not make the playoffs, you have to lose 2 games in a row. So let's say the Warriors win, the Lakers would then have to lose another game to not be able to make the playoffs. Whether you're the Grizz or the Spurs, you have to win that first game, and then you have to win the second one as well. So that is the latest in terms of how exactly that is going to go. All right. We're going to be joined, by the way, here in a bit by Bobby Barak in the next segment, in fact. He is one of the writers for OutKick. He does a fantastic job writing about a variety of different subjects. I'm going to talk to him about the NBA playoffs. Going to talk to him about Tim Tebow, whether that was a valid story all of last week. Also, mergers in media and how that could impact sports rights. Something going on with Discovery and HBO Max, Turner, TNT, all of those different places. Plus, Donald Trump is gone. Has that impacted sports ratings in a big way? Because news ratings are down. We will discuss all that and more. This is OutKick. I appreciate all of you hanging out with us. I hope you are having a fantastic Monday. We are certainly here on Fox Sports Radio.
This is OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis.
We are rolling through the Monday edition of the program. NBA playoffs officially set, as we were just talking about, to open up the third hour of the program. Some nervous people, I think it's fair to say, in many different parts of the country that didn't necessarily think they would be nervous about the play-in scenarios. We're joined now by Bobby Barak, who's been doing a fantastic job covering a variety of different stories for OutKick over the past year. And I'll start there with you, Bobby. Good idea or bad idea for the NBA to have this scenario? For people out there, we just talked about it, but I feel like you got to keep repeating it. 7, 8, 9, and 10 are not official into the playoff. 7 will play 8, 9 will play 10. 9 and 10, the loser of that game is done. The winner of 9-10, the winner of 7-8 is in as the 7 seed. And then the loser of 7-8 will play the winner of 9-10, and whoever wins that game will be the 8 seed. I might have made that a little bit more complicated than it needs to be in trying to phrase it, but I think this is something that's a little bit complicated for a lot of people because we've never seen a scenario like this. Good move or bad move to have this play-in scenario?
Well, I think it's a great move. I think what it does is it spices up the NBA playoffs, which is exactly what they needed, because unlike baseball's first round, the NBA playoffs first round isn't as up in the air, unknown, because it's still best out of seven, just like the NBA Finals. So more often than not, you know exactly who's going to win. Even the 4-5 matchups usually don't really matter because they can't beat the top teams. But this year, it's going to be great for the NBA, or I use the word great somewhat because I don't think anything in the NBA has been great so far. But they get Steph Curry in this play-in tournament, and you just went down those scenarios. I think we're going to tune in to see what he can do. He doesn't have his running mate, Klay Thompson, this year. The Warriors aren't viewed as title contenders like they have been, not last year, but the 5 years before that. But he's not fired, Klay. He just clinched the scoring title last year as the season came to an end. And you just never know if he could win those 2-3 games there. I think that gives the NBA an extra storyline, which it really needs, because everybody's going to be counting down. You're going to get Brooklyn or the Lakers in the finals, KD versus LeBron. But this Steph Curry looming threat of him getting his team in the playoffs, out of the play-in round, I guess an intriguing storyline. All numbers say that he's the second biggest individual draw in the NBA still behind LeBron James. So if I'm the NBA, I'm happy that they found out a way to get the Warriors in this play-in tournament. And really, they'll never admit it, but rooting for the Warriors to make it out of it successfully.
We're talking to Bobby Barak. The NBA, everybody said, oh, the reason why the ratings were down was because of the bubble. Regular season NBA ratings plummeted again, down another 13% off of last year's NBA playoff ratings, which included bubble games. So things have actually gotten worse. If you were Adam Silver and you were in charge of the NBA, what would you do to try and get the league back into sort of the pole position that it was in several years ago? Because I think you wrote an article, since 2012, the NBA has lost 45% of its regular season television audience, which is way worse than the NFL, for instance, or college football, which a lot of people wanted to compare the NBA to, even worse than a lot of the college basketball. How do you fix it?
That's a good question, because I thought about this, I've written about this topic even before I even got to Outkick, about this NBA decline, which has been, as you said, going on for a while and really noticeable in the past 4 years. I don't see a lot of solutions, because what the NBA did by design, which turned out so poorly, is turn off half the country. I mean, yeah. They went so far down. It's not even that the NBA went political. Half the country has dealt with that for years, with Hollywood, with sitcoms, music. But the NBA didn't just take a political stance. They took a hard political stance, one that I would say isn't even representative of half the country. What they really did was they told half the country they were wrong, bad, evil, racist, and about another quarter of the country saying, you're halfway there, but get in line, follow our lead, start spreading the messages that we've spread. Numbers show, a Yahoo poll found about a month ago that over half of America had switched their sports habits after these leagues, particularly the NBA, started spreading these social justice messages. That's just not something that goes away, because they've been doing it so aggressively and increasingly over the past 4 years. So I think the people that they turned off, it's going to be hard to get them back. Now, I mean, the one way to do it somewhat to try to weather this storm is you have to create urgency, and there's no urgency in the regular season. And we need to talk about the playoffs. There's not a lot of urgency in the first couple of rounds, because the top teams know, okay, we can lose 1-2 games, we can still beat this team by 4. So I think going forward, the NBA is going to have to create more urgency, and that starts with getting the star players to care about the games. I had someone who's a longtime NBA fan who covers the NBA told me about 3 weeks ago, he goes, if Kevin Durant, LeBron, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, if these guys don't care enough to play, why should I watch? Why would fans pay money to go when they can start going back to games next year in full? I mean, that's such a deep question, because that's true. Why would someone spend a bunch of money, pay for parking, set aside their entire night to watch a game on TV if it's 50-50, if the stars are even going to play? That's a tremendous problem on top of what they've done politically.
Yeah, I think it is a really major issue, right? Because, and we'll see what happens with seeding this year in the NBA playoffs, but a LeBron for the past several years has basically let it be known he doesn't care where his team is seeded. and that he feels like they can make a run to the NBA Finals wherever they need to come from. And I think that same sort of characterization has now carried across many other parts of the league, that it really doesn't matter what your record is in the regular season, and that really you're kind of being a fool if you go all out in the regular season in any way. And when you have 82 regular season games, I can understand why, if you are spending good money to go watch a team play. And I thought that was interesting what was said by Kobe Bryant's wife in the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. And I think it was a quote that was from Joe DiMaggio or somebody else basically saying the same thing. And I do think it's instructive for a lot of people out there listening to us right now that Kobe wanted to put on a show every single time. And I think Michael Jordan felt the same way, because he didn't know when that kid who was there watching him in person was going to be there for the first time and maybe the only time. And I know there are a lot of parents out there right now listening, and a lot of adults too, who don't have the money to go watch a team play, don't have season tickets. They don't get to go to watch every single game. And if you get to take a kid for their birthday, right, or you get to take a kid as a Christmas present or whatever it might be to go watch your favorite player, and that player doesn't even take the court because they're just deciding to rest on that night, I mean, that is just, I think, something that stings for a long time. And I think about that as a kid who didn't get to go to a lot of pro sports events growing up. You were so excited to get to see your favorite player. And if they didn't actually ever take the court or take the field, it was just a real, you know, sort of gut punch for a kid. And I think that's happening way too often in the NBA, to say nothing of, you know, primetime televised games where the stars don't come out and play either. So I think it's a major issue. I don't know how you resolve it, because from a competitive basis, if I were a coach, I would say, hey, I want my guys to play 15 less games and be much closer to 100% by the time we get to the postseason. And so I just don't know how you reconcile the fact that load management, obviously Kawhi proved that it can work pretty well with how his minutes were managed in Toronto. We'll see whether or not it ends up working out for him with the Clippers or not. But, you know, the clear detail of the regular season not mattering has been established in a major way in the NBA, and I think it's going to be hard to unring that bell.
Yeah, I remember growing up, I got a Christmas gift one year. It was, I'm from Michigan, not too far from Detroit, and it was tickets to see the Pistons versus the Lakers, so the chance to see Kobe Bryant and Shaq. And that was probably the best present I ever got for Christmas. But Clay, if a kid got that now and will replace, you know, Kobe and Shaq with whatever you want to say, the Brooklyn Nets trio, they might be excited. But there's almost a better than half, or better than a worse than 50% chance they won't even get to see that trio. This is a mind-boggling number. This new glamorous Nets trio of Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden, they played fewer than 10 games together this season. Fewer than 10. Yeah. So anyone that bought tickets when the Nets come to their city, and this year's a little different because of COVID, but like they were expecting those guys to be out there, and they weren't. So how do you make that as a special present? Because you're taking such a gamble. And a lot of times these guys are announced to not play like a few hours before the game.
Yeah.
I mean, people bought tickets for a week.
You know, it makes it hard to gamble too. Yeah, but it's not like you can plan in advance and say, oh, the star's not going to be on the court. You might not know almost unless you're active on social media looking at injury lists. Until you actually sit down in your chair, you may not be aware that the star player is not going to be out there. And by the way, the other thing about it is load management in a season when there were only 72 regular season games. So the NBA was still having an issue with players not caring very much about the regular season, even after dialing back by 10 the number of regular season games that were being played. All right, that's one big story that will be talked about quite a bit. What did you make of the Tim Tebow story, as his potential joining of the Jacksonville Jaguars was a major point of discussion in media and fan circles last week? What did you think of the coverage? We're talking, by the way, with Bobby Barak, who writes very well for OutKick and has been for the past year or more. What did you think of the tenor and tone of Tim Tebow coverage?
Yeah, I mean, it's so frustrating that this is how all these stories are covered. So, I mean, think about it on his face. This is a guy, one of the most historically beloved and popular and successful college quarterbacks ever. You know, came to the NFL, had a spark that one year with the Broncos in the playoffs and failed. But, like, he's getting a chance to come back to play for his former college coach as a potential backup tight end that's going to make, like, the bare minimum an NFL player can make. Like, more than anything, it's just a guy that's doing whatever he can to play in the NFL. That's exactly what, like, guys get together when they're 17 and, like, talk about, like, we'll do whatever we can to make the varsity team. Like, that's what he's doing. Like, he's going out so hard, taking the most unlucrative position he can. And the media, instead of celebrating that fun story or having some fun with it or asking fans and radio what they think, they right away call it racist and compare it to Colin Kaepernick because he doesn't have a job in the NFL. Well, first of all, I'm not really sure what one has to do with the other. I mean, Urban Meyer played with Tebow. He knows him. He has spoken at length about how much of a leader Tim Tebow is and why he wants him in the locker room. So first of all, no one's really saying that about Kaepernick. And two, the biggest difference is we just talked about Tim Tebow's doing whatever he can to play. I don't think Colin Kaepernick wants to play. And he sure isn't going to sign up to play backup tight end. And if he ever did, can you imagine the media coverage of Kaepernick had to play backup tight end? So that was really the story. I didn't hear anybody talk about Tim Tebow going to Jaguars in any other manner than how it compares to Colin Kaepernick's situation, calling it racist. I mean, I don't think the average sports fan heard the Tim Tebow news and right away said, hey, what about Colin Kaepernick? But on Twitter and on sports media television, that's exactly what they thought about. That just shows you the disconnect there is between those who cover sports and those who watch sports.
That's a very well said, I think. We're talking to Bobby Barak, OutKick writer for the past year and more. All right, I want to get into a couple of different media stories that are in play now. In particular, you cover the idea. I want to start here. For people out there who may not have heard, there is a report that Discovery, which obviously has a bunch of different channels, and the media assets of AT&T, which would be like HBO, TNT, TBS, a lot of sports that are on certainly TNT and TBS, that they would be forming a new company in an effort to create an even larger streaming competitor for Netflix and for Disney Plus. And I know there's a lot of people out there listening right now that are like me and already pay for a lot of different streaming services. What do you think about the idea of this combo, and how does it strike you? How many of these streaming services ultimately are there going to be that find a big audience? Let me try to track through. There's obviously a lot of sports components connected to them, I believe, and you correct me if I'm missing any like big ones. We've got Netflix, which is still the biggest, Disney Plus, which is the second biggest. We have got now Discovery Plus. We've got HBO Max. We have got Paramount. We have got the Hulu. And also, what is the Comcast NBC version
Peacock.
Called? Peacock. Paramount and Peacock. I get those two mixed up. How many of these streaming services is the average household going to have going forward? And what do you think about the idea that that they need to, in this scenario, Discovery and HBO Max basically need to merge in order to continue to have sort of the enough content to keep people subscribing?
Yeah, so to give the listeners a little background, so Warner Media, I believe in 2018, merged with AT&T. It's what Warner Media is made up of. It's CNN, HBO, Cartoon Network, TBS, TNT, the other one I think is True TV, in the Warner Brothers studio. So a lot of good content there. Discovery, I believe, is Discovery, TLC, Animal Planet, and Food Network. A little more niche, but still very popular and influential. So yeah, the idea is to combine them all together. And the first outlet that reported this, Bloomberg, and I actually use the phrase, this is a way to kind of combat Netflix or counter it. I have a hard time believing, Clay, that any of these services, no matter how much they join together or merge, are going to be able to take down Netflix. It was one of my first pieces for OutKick. I wrote about how I think Netflix is always going to be the one everybody has. Then it's like, okay, how many other ones we need? It's Netflix and XX. I think a lot of households probably have three now. That'd be my guess. You named them all. We actually left out Apple Plus, which
I forgot about Amazon Prime. My point was, I mean, there are so many of them. Initially, right. The idea was that it's going to be cheaper if you have streaming compared to a cable package. But what's ultimately, I think, ended up happening, and I think for a lot of people out there listening to us right now, sure, you may share some passwords, although they're starting to crack down on that. But a lot of people, like, I'll use myself as an example. I have a cable package. I have Comcast. But we have basically all of these streaming services that we are signed up for as well. And far from saving me money, all of these new streaming packages are just costing me more. I didn't even mention ESPN Plus, which is a lot of times bundled in with Disney Plus. But there's so many different things that I have to be subscribed to now in order to be able to watch all of the programming that I want to be able to watch, that far from saving me money, I'm actually spending substantially more than I used to just with my cable package, when I used to be able to watch everything basically that I wanted on cable and maybe then also had Netflix. Now people are making money off of me multiple different ways, and I'm having to sign up for so many different of these services.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely the point. You're 100% right. Like, I would even go back to just, like, 2, 3, 4 years ago. Everybody's like, yeah, you know, go to Netflix, cut the cord. It's going to save you so much money.
Yes.
Okay, everybody has Netflix. I don't know, what is it, $17 a month? Well, now HBO Max is a must. Don't not to mention the new Game of Thrones is coming out, so it's really a must. You add that $15 a month. Well, Amazon Prime, you have to have Amazon Prime because they have this new Lord of the Rings that they just spent $500 million on. So those are the three. And if you have a family, you really need Disney Plus, Clay. And if you're a sports fan, you might need ESPN Plus for the UFC top-ranked boxing. Well, then you might as well join Hulu and get the package. So you've already had a lot of money. That doesn't even mention, you know, like a place like Tubi, which has like these great lawyer films. Like, that might be more of a specialty. But I hear that's doing well. Apple TV Plus, what I just mentioned, you know, they have new shows. And, yeah, you start adding them all up. And you know what you're not doing? You're not really canceling it. You're just adding to that amount that you already have. It's not like, oh, I have Netflix this month, I'm going to cancel that and switch to Hulu, or I'm going to switch to Paramount Plus. It's no, you add Paramount Plus on top of HBO, Amazon, Hulu, Disney Plus, on and on and on. So, yeah, I don't think anybody's saving money. I think people are spending more. And the ones that are really getting hit hard are people like you and I who have cable and all these streaming services.
Yes. Yeah, there's no doubt. And also, if you have kids, I mean, again, to your point, you're not just – I can't just focus on sports, right? Dub and his roommates probably don't have to worry about having – do you have a Disney Plus subscription, Dub?
Yes, I do. Disney Plus is one of them, yeah.
Yeah, but is that only for ESPN Plus? What I'm saying is, like, you're a single guy, so in theory, you don't have your kids, you know, running around clamoring for whatever the latest, you know, Disney Plus offering is. But if you're a family, if you're a household – you're going to have to sign up for all this stuff because your kids are going to be asking for it. And so it's different than if you're just a single guy or a single girl who can just focus on maybe the programming that you care about the most. It's crazy. I mean, the amount of expense is just piling up in a hurry. I'm going to bring back Bobby Barak. I want to ask him a couple of more questions. We'll bring him back in the next segment.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Houshmandzadeh and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Bobby Barak hanging out with us, does a fantastic job writing at Outkick. You have a story that is going up today looking at ratings for news locations, right? Over the past 100 days, one of the big discussion points in terms of sports ratings last year was, hey, so many people are dialed in to Trump versus Biden, to COVID, to all of the news stories that they were distracting from the world of sports. Well, that's no longer the case. The first 100 days of Joe Biden, Donald Trump was a news stimulus. Love or hate him, he got people at MSNBC, Fox News, and CNN basically a perpetual sugar high because people couldn't stop watching the Trump show. Now that Trump is not in office anymore, Joe Biden is in office. It's now been 100 days. What's happening with those news ratings?
This story's fascinating. So, and here's the best way to put it. The industry, talking about cable news, that benefited most from Trump's presidency was the happiest to see him go. They were on a four-year-long quest to get him out of there, and they're the ones that benefited from him the most. I was out of any industry. I mean, the numbers he gave them are stuff that they're never going to be able to recover or match again. So the first 100 days, well, let's be honest, pretty rough. There are some positives, though. It's not all negative, but just to run through, you know, one number that stuck out. At the end of January, when it was when CNN really peaked, as they always do during high news, breaking news periods, you know, with a combination of the second impeachment still left over from the insurrection on January 6th. So they were averaging 2.7 million viewers in prime time. This is the last week of January. They were never going to sustain that. But, Clay, they're down to about 800, 750,000 in prime time.
So CNN, since Joe Biden took office, CNN has lost like 70% roughly. I'm doing math on my head, which is always tough. But they've gone from like 2.7 million viewers per night all the way down to like 750, nearly 2 million viewers they have lost since Joe Biden took office.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of reasons for that. I think one of the biggest ones, and this is a matter of which channel anybody watched, I think anybody objective would agree with this, Fox News and MSNBC really haven't changed their strategy much. You know, Trump isn't there. But see, what CNN did so interestingly during Trump's presidency is really what right-wing radio did during the Clinton-Obama years. They kind of painted that person as the boogeyman, which is what CNN did more so than any other network. You would say, well, what MSNBC? Yeah, they focus on other stuff, too. It was more – that's a left-wing network. It wasn't essentially just an anti-Trump. So what CNN has struggled to do so far is replace Donald Trump. They're trying to find what industry calls the quote-unquote boogeyman, that villain for their viewers to root against. They've tried so far with Tucker Carlson, but it's not exactly the same thing. You're talking a cable news host versus a president. So CNN – There were the newspapers and sports media did after Jordan. They're trying to replace somebody who they cannot replace. That really explains a lot of CNN's struggles. I think they really need a villain, and they need a villain fast. Hopefully, for CNN's sake, perhaps someone like Ron DeSantis will announce, you know, he's running for president in like next 2 years. So CNN has a struggle for the full 4 years. But they have a lot of problems there not having that focus. And here's another thing about CNN that's different from the other two cable news networks. Their individual stars, and they do have several, they're not exactly needle movers in the ratings. So if you look over the numbers, when Tucker Carlson's on TV, ratings spike. When Rachel Maddow's on TV, numbers spike. MSNBC averaged in April 1.6 million viewers the hour before Rachel Maddow, 1.7 million the hour after Rachel Maddow. During Rachel Maddow's hour, they averaged 2.7 million. She's responsible for a million viewers. That's unheard of. CNN doesn't have that, even though they have Chris Cuomo, Don Lemon, Anderson Cooper, Jake Tapper. They don't have that single star that brings ratings well above the base. You couple that with an identity crisis post-Trump, you have ratings now that are below a million in prime time.
Fox News and MSNBC, how are they holding up relative to without Trump? Because a lot of people said, oh, without Trump, Fox News is going to be in trouble. Same people said the same thing about MSNBC because he was, you know, the diametrical opposites in terms of how they covered him to a large extent. How are their ratings holding up?
Yeah, so they are down. I mean, they're both down like since that same time frame. MSNBC's lost, 700,000 viewers in prime time. Fox News has lost, I believe, 350,000. So they're both down. What's really happened to both of them is that they're down also a lot on the day side. So what's going on now, without Trump, there's less of an appetite to leave cable news on all day like people were doing last year. What they're doing is they're tuning in for select shows and turning off when those shows are no longer on. So if you see the numbers, there's a disparity. Tucker Carlson averaged 3 million viewers in April. That's 300,000 more than the second highest show of April, and that was the Five, a panel show at 5 p.m. And we just saw Rachel Maddow. She brings that MSNBC up, number up really high at 9, then it dips back down at 10. So those networks are down too, but because of star power and select shows, they're able to kind of withhold it at certain, or withstand some of that at certain times. So there's no winner in this, and I think everybody's to some degree, from a network standpoint, is losing. But here's where the individuals win. People like Tucker Carlson, Rachel Maddow, Greg Gutfeld, Joe Scarborough in the morning, they become more important because that base number is lower. So their star is more important because they're bringing that number up. So I think during contract time, those individuals that are able to succeed post-Trump are going to be more valuable than they were in the Trump presidency when really numbers were setting records from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m.
That's Bobby Barak. He does great work at OutKick. Encourage you to go ahead and bookmark him. Make sure you're reading what he does at OutKick. But I wanted to go ahead for all of you who are waking up on the West Coast and getting ready for the start of your day to circle back around to what we started off the third hour of the program discussing, which is the NBA playoff series. And I'm putting series in quotation marks because these aren't really series. They're effectively play-in games. Are now all set, and the Portland Trailblazers, it's been a battle between them and the Lakers over who's going to be six and who's going to be seven. Well, they blew out the Nuggets, and so it didn't end up mattering very much. There wasn't a lot of suspense over exactly what these games would look like. And so as a result, the Hornets and the Pacers are playing in the 9-10 game in the East tomorrow. The Wizards and the Celtics are playing in the 7-8 game. And on Wednesday, we've got the Spurs-Grizzlies in the 9-10 game. And we have the Warriors, which I think the NBA is going to be excited about. The Warriors going up against the Lakers in that 7-8 game series. So, what does this look like? The winner, and I'll use the West to begin with, the winner of the Warriors-Lakers will be your 7 seed. Okay, whoever wins that game, which will be played at 10 o'clock Eastern on Wednesday night, will be your 7 seed. Whoever loses Spurs-Grizzlies is eliminated. The winner will play the loser of the Warriors-Lakers, if that makes sense. Your 7-8 winner between the Wizards and the Celtics will be in the playoff as the 7 seed. Your loser will play the winner of the Hornets-Pacers. Is that certifiably confusing to everybody out there? It's a new deal. That is where we are headed. The end result is Wednesday night, I would think the NBA is happy. They get Steph Curry against LeBron James in the game that will get 98% probably of the overall discussion of the start of the NBA playoffs. All that still to come. We'll be breaking it down for you more this week. I appreciate all of you hanging out with us. Search out my name, Clay Travis. Search out OutKick. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Go give us 5 stars. We'll be back tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.